I'm Chelsea, and I love true crime.
And I'm David, and I love horror movies.
And this is our one-year podcasting anniversary special based on true crime.
Yeah. So, well, happy anniversary, Chelsea.
Happy anniversary to you, too. Now we have a third anniversary to celebrate.
Wow.
Very exciting.
Yes.
But we are so happy to not only be here celebrating our one-year anniversary with you guys, but to just be back in general. So we took a little bit of a break to move most of the way across the country.
Yes. Yes, we did.
So this is the first episode that we are recording in sunny, beautiful Santa Fe that I'm just already madly in love with.
Yeah, New Mexico is awesome.
So for this very special episode, we put out the call for questions and topics that you guys would want to hear us cover. And you guys delivered. I was so pleased with the response that we got. And we got some really, really interesting questions and topic ideas that we're excited to talk to you guys about.
Yeah, super excited. The questions were great. I was thank you everybody for jumping in and asking such hard hitting questions.
Yes, and I love that we got quite a few horror movie related questions. They weren't all true crime, so
yes.
David is in his element.
Yeah.
So without further ado, why don't we get into our very first topic suggestion? So this is from Lee, one of the hosts of the excellent Lust Mordia podcast. And she wanted us to talk a little bit about people in movies who turned out to be murderers. Why don't you go first, David?
The first one that came to mind really was Robert Blake.
Yes.
He jumped to the forefront of my mind because we covered one of his more famous films, which was In Cold Blood, in episode 10 of our show. And just as a refresher, on May 4th of 2001, Blake took Bonnie Lee Bakley to an Italian restaurant.
His wife.
Yes. And he claimed that after they left the restaurant, he realized that he had left his gun, oops, at their table and went back to get it.
Should probably keep track of that.
Yeah, right? Well, it wasn't there. And when he came back, his wife had, surprise, she had been fatally shot in the head while sitting in their car.
But he has a perfect alibi because he was going to get his gun. So clearly he didn't have his gun to shoot her, right?
Right, exactly. But turned out that the gun was not the murder weapon, but Blake ended up being arrested and charged with the murder. And basically it was a murder for hire, which involved, interestingly enough, a few Hollywood stuntmen.
Yes, but forgot the best part. Acquitted of all charges.
Yes.
Welcome to Hollywood.
Yep, welcome to Hollywood.
One free pass to kill your wife or spouse or significant other.
I mean, he was in the Little Rascals, right?
yeah, that's when they gave him the pass. He was like 6 years old and they're like, you might need this someday.
Yeah. Okay, so what do you have?
Well, I picked one. I maybe cheated a little bit because this person is not a famous actor, but it's one of my favorite just weird Hollywood stories. So this is Paul Bateson. He was a background actor in The Exorcist.
Ooh.
So in the late 70s, six men were found dismembered and wrapped in plastic bags in the Hudson River. These murders were eventually linked to Paul Bateson, who was an X-ray technician, and he was in the background of a scene that was filmed in the hospital for The Exorcist. So they used a real neurosurgeon and his team. So, you see Paul Bateson in the movie, you see his face. That's actually, I think the director of the movie recognized him when he was in the news later, because it turns out that during that time period when he was in the movie, these murders were actually occurring.
That's so freaky.
Yes. So he was actually caught when they found the body of film critic Addison Verrill in his New York apartment, beaten to death. And Bateson confessed to meeting Verrill at a gay bar, going home with him, and then later that night, killing him and ransacking his apartment. And it was while he was in prison for this crime that he confessed to his fellow inmates to doing the same thing with other men. So there were these other men that were, found dismembered, although he was never officially linked to those crimes. And he was released from prison in 2004.
Wow.
So, yep. Not very long to serve, even if it's only one murder.
Yeah, yeah. And captured on celluloid forever.
Yes, yes. The I think it was the director who saw it in the news and actually contacted him and went and spoke with him while he was in prison. So just a strange connection.
Very weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing compared to the poltergeist curse, though.
Yep.
That's
which is going
to come up later, right?
Yeah, it is.
Actually, it's going to come up right now. So Valerie wants us to talk about some actors or movie-related persons who were murdered. So do you want to go first again?
Oh, sure.
We got that connection, that good segue.
Yeah, and we actually just watched the sequel to this movie. So it was Poltergeist actor Dominique Dunn. And she played Dana Freeling, who is the oldest daughter in the film. She plays Carol Ann's sister. And she was tragically murdered by a former boyfriend and, well, sounds like stalker and abuser, John Thomas Sweeney. Not to be confused with the serial killer, John Sweeney. From what I've heard, their names kind of get mixed up here and there. And he strangled her in the driveway of her North Hollywood home on October 30th of 1982. And she later died after, well, it put her into a coma. And she passed away a few days later on November the 4th. And John Thomas Sweeney was sentenced to 7 years, was it, on manslaughter charges, but was released after just serving about half of that.
That is nuts. Wow.
Yeah. Well, what's even more nuts is that he, once he was released into the public, he became a chef. And I believe the Dunn family tried for years to, you know, seek out like what's the right word?
Biblical justice?
Yes. Oh. And he changed his name in the mid-90s and disappeared. It's off of the radar anyway. So he's probably still alive and out there, and maybe he's cooking food at your favorite restaurant.
Oh, God, no. That's really freaky. And it's interesting. So I didn't actually choose her, but I did read a bit about Rebecca Schaefer. So she was, I guess, most famously known for being the star of My Sister Sam, the TV show.
Oh, yeah.
And she was murdered by a stalker, but it was in 1989. And apparently that's when they enacted the more strict anti-stalking laws.
Oh,
so before that, it was like not really considered a big deal or a warning sign when, you know, clearly it was. These are just two very young actresses who were murdered.
Yeah, super tragic.
Yeah.
Who do you have as your main
yes.
actor?
So as my main actor slash movie related person. So I picked Adrienne Shelley. So she was an actor, but she's more famously known for being a writer and director. So she was born June 24th, 1966. And she began acting when she was 10. But just by the late 90s, she had starred in a few movies, but had already kind of shifted over to wanting to be a writer and a director. So those more behind the scenes roles. And her big break, you know, what you guys probably know her from, even if you don't know her yet. So she wrote, directed, and co-starred in the movie Waitress, which is just an adorable movie. I really love it. They recently adapted it, so now it's a musical also, which I'd love to see someday. Hint, hint, David.
yep.
But it stars Keri Russell and Nathan Fillion.
Uh-huh.
All you brown coats out there.
Right on.
Yeah. So she was married with an infant daughter, and she was waiting to hear whether Waitress would be accepted into the Sundance Film Festival, which it was. That was where it premiered. But on November 1st of 2006, before she got that good news, she was found dead in her West Village apartment.
Oh,
yeah. Geez. Her body was found hanging in the bathroom, and police initially said that they believed it was a suicide, but her husband insisted that she would not have taken her own life. She had, you know, a lot of good things going for her. She also had a daughter who was just 2 months old, and the police examined further, and they found a sneaker print on the toilet in gypsum dust, and this print was matched to a construction worker who had been working in the building, 19-year-old Diego Pilco, and he had been working construction in the apartment upstairs. He confessed to killing Adrienne. Although he was not very straightforward in terms of why, he gave a few stories. One of them was that she had complained about the noise they were making upstairs, and he got angry and he threw a hammer at her. And then he was worried that she would report his behavior and get him deported because he was an illegal immigrant. I think he was from Ecuador. So then he killed her because, you know, that's what you do. But wow. That's not the only story. He actually later said that he was on break when he saw her and, you know, she caught his eye. She's like a beautiful blonde. And he said he followed her into her apartment and assaulted her and killed her. People tend to believe that story more because of that gypsum dust. So she did not have any gypsum dust on her shoes, which they think if she had gone upstairs to complain about the noise, she would have, you know, had some traces of that since that's how they caught him.
Wow.
But we'll never know the truth. He did confess to killing her and got 25 years for manslaughter.
Whew, jeez.
I know. So sad. She's so talented. And I really like that movie. It's really cute. You have not seen it. We should watch it together.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a cute movie. Yeah. So we had a question from Alex. Her question was, movies that we're glad that aren't true crime based and true crimes that we're glad aren't movies. So Chelsea, what...
I think I have the best answer for this one. I think I claim the best answer.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So I'm very, very, very glad that a Human Centipede is not based on a true crime.
Perfect.
Right?
Yeah.
That would just be a step too far. Although I feel like every true crime podcast would have an episode about it because it's just so messed up.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. And true crimes that I'm glad they haven't made movies about. You know, the first one that came to mind to me was the Sandy Hook Massacre because it's terrible. And I can't imagine them ever making a movie about that.
Yeah.
I feel like at their core, movies should be at least a little bit entertaining. And there's absolutely nothing in that story that's not just heartbreaking. You know, and I feel that way about all school shootings, and most of them, you know, don't have movies except actually there are quite a few movies about Columbine. I guess there's something weird about Columbine. So you get the like people who kind of idolize them that I just do not and will never understand. I mean, we just had another school shooting on Friday and it's very, very sad to me. So after that downer, what do you have, David?
Well, I'm really glad that Friday the 13th isn't based on a true crime because, you know, Jason just keeps coming back. And so far as I know, there are no real life cases of an undead person coming back from the grave again and again to slaughter campers or camp counselors. I think that's kind of a good thing.
Yeah.
So not as good of an answer as your Human Centipede by far.
But it probably would have been your choice if I hadn't already told you I was doing it.
Yeah. No, I didn't even think of that.
Oh, really? Good.
Yeah. I was just like, I'm glad that there's no Hockey Mask killer. I mean, there have been. We actually did that one episode where we talked about the Jason and Freddy inspired.
It's true. Yeah.
Murders, but, you know, it wasn't the other way around. So,
yep.
And I'm with you. I'm glad that film adaptations of school shootings seem to be mostly off limits. And, you know, as you said, especially today's era of frequent school shootings. It's super sensitive and terrible hot button topic. And I'm just glad that we are not watching film series about school shootings for sure.
Yeah. And I would say that's probably a topic that we're not going to cover. You know, even I know the Columbine movies exist, but I grew up through Columbine and that's not really something that I feel like researching and talking about.
Yeah. Same here.
So we have a question. Our next question, actually, Justin and Charles both asked similar versions of this. So what are some murders that aren't movies yet, but should be movies?
Actually, I found six all in the same article. And this was in an article called Six True Crimes That Could Make Great Movies by Shyler Martin. And we'll include the link to that in the show notes. And the one that stood out to me was the story of the Greenbrier Ghost, which is a West Virginia murder trial that it seems to stand as one of the few in which a ghost testimony was allowed as evidence.
And we did talk about this in our Halloween episode, right? One of our Halloween episodes.
Yes. I believe we did. And just as a recap, it happened when a young woman died in 1897, which she passed away reportedly of natural causes, but her spirit appeared to her mother and she revealed the true cause of death, which was the murder by the hands of her husband. And the woman's wounds ended up matching what the spirit allegedly told her mom, and the cause of death was changed and it was ruled as murder.
That would be an awesome movie. I would absolutely watch that.
How about you? What do you have?
Well, my choice was actually another one we talked about in the podcast. podcast. So in our Black Christmas episode, we talked about Theodore Edward Conies, aka the Denver Spider-Man.
Oh, creepy.
Yes. And I feel like it would be a perfect horror movie. And you could take some liberties. So the real story goes, you know, he had snuck into this person's house and fit through this little teeny tiny door into the attic crawl space and had been living in there for, I think, weeks or months before he was caught by the homeowner. So he killed the homeowner, went back up in the attic and kept living there until he was finally caught. You know, the house had been vacated, the man's wife moved back in and then just left because of all these weird happenings that were this guy living in the roof. And he was eventually caught. He like came down and looked out a window while police were patrolling and they saw him. They ran in, they were able to grab him by the legs just as he was going through the tiny crawl space.
Oh, the little worm.
Oh my gosh. And it's just, it feels like it should be a movie, and I don't know why it's not yet. You could really sell so many tickets just by saying things are based on true stories, even if they're very loosely based. And I feel like you could do an almost literal adaptation of this story and it would be perfect and terrifying. Although my idea for a movie would be actually from the perspective of like an across the street neighbor. So you could have, you know, the neighbor realizing that, you know, there was the person who was murdered there and they don't know who it is. And then they start having like eerie happenings with the house and everyone thinks it's the ghost of the guy who was murdered, and then eventually discovering it's a real person. So
hey,
that's
my idea. Just thought of a theme song for that.
For that?
Yeah.
Would it be?
Denver Spider-Man lives in whatever home that he can.
Yep. Perfect. Yep. I like it.
All right. So from Justin, we have, who was the first serial killer to have a movie made about their crimes? So Chelsea, what have you got?
So I did a little bit of research for this one. And what I found was the first movie is 1909's The Crimes of Diogo Alves.
Aha.
And this was about 20 years before the more famous M. I think we've talked about that on the podcast.
So yeah.
Another serial killer movie. But this movie is only 7 minutes long. It was a Portuguese film. And the true story behind it, it was a man named Diogo Alves, and he would ambush farmers that were returning home along a path that was on a 200-foot high aqueduct. So he would rob them and then throw them over the edge. And at first, police thought, oh, so many people are killing themselves by jumping off of this aqueduct. But he did this close to 70 times.
Wow.
And eventually they just closed the bridge.
I don't blame him. Yeah, yeah. I would do the same thing.
Yeah. So Diogo formed a gang of robbers and he started invading people's homes. And he killed 4 more people that way before he was finally caught. He was executed by hanging in 1941 and his head was kept preserved in a jar. And you've probably seen this picture. Our global listenership. It's incredibly well preserved. And it went a little bit viral, maybe like a year or two ago, because he kind of looks like Ed Sheeran. Yeah. So look it up if you aren't put off by that sort of thing. It's not like, I mean, it's gross, but it's not graphic. It just looks like a person's head in a jar.
Weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I remember seeing that one. That's pretty amazing.
We have another one, another good one from Justin. He had a lot of good movie ones. So this question is, what serial killer has had the most films about their crimes? And I had a guess of who it was, and research seemed to confirm it.
And we talked about this actually in our From Hell episode of Jack the Ripper. And Chelsea found a list of 115 movies and TV show episodes about Jack.
Yeah.
And the first Hitchcock movie, right? Which was The Lodger.
Yep. Also about Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's that story is quite prolific.
Yeah. I remember going in our episode about that. I was like going through the, I was like, oh, what are some highlights? This won't be that difficult. And it was just one after the other after the other. It's like goes back in time to find Jack the Ripper. Yeah. Jack the Ripper goes to the future to murder people. It's a cartoon bear that's also Jack the Ripper. I don't know. It's just like all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Sherlock Holmes versus Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jack and the Beanstalk versus Jack the Ripper. Oh, no, that's not one. Yeah.
Jack v. Jack. yeah, no, it's crazy. I know some other contenders were, you know, there are a lot of movies about Ed Gein, some more literal than others, but there's just nothing like Jack the Ripper.
That's the quote. There is just nothing like Jack nothing the Ripper.
Jack the Ripper. You could put that on the back of every Jack the Ripper movie.
Yeah. Perfect. Yep. Perfect. The other one from Justin. Chelsea, what was the first R-rated horror movie? This was a bit of a stumper.
Yeah, so I tried to get to the bottom of this, but it's a little weird. So this conventional rating system of, you know, the G, PG, PG-13, whatever, and then like the R rating didn't really exist before November 1st of 1968. So that's when it went into effect. The first one I could find that was a horror movie that came out after that was Scream Baby Scream, which I've not seen or heard
seen
of.
Yeah.
And that was January 1st of 1969. But the other issue is, you know, they went back and rated movies that had come out beforehand. So something like Rosemary's Baby came out in April of 1968, but it has an R rating. So
yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. Well, but, you did some good sleuthing, though.
Yeah, yeah. And we did take some liberty. So we decided to, David at least can talk about what the first R-rated horror movie he saw was.
And I just kind of took it to kind of personalize it a bit. And the first R-rated horror movie that I saw in theaters was Nightmare on Elm Street for the Dream Master. And my dad took me to see it. I was pretty young at the time. Yeah, I loved it. And that kind of, that one stands out the most in terms of seeing it in the theater. And then my first R-rated VHS movie ended up being the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
So good.
Yeah. Well, that one sort of traumatized me when my cousins rented it. And of course, I saw it. I was very young. I was probably like 10 or 11. Oh. And yeah, the biggest scene that freaked me out and stayed with me was when the two guys are racing the car next to what turns out to be Leatherface. And he cuts into their car with the chainsaw and the one guy gets his head kind of cut in half.
Yeah. No, that's definitely gross, but good.
Yeah.
I like the movie. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's great. I love it now. But yeah, as a kid, freaked me out. Yeah. Flipped my world.
Yeah.
But do you have an R-rated, first R-rated horror movie memory?
I don't even know for sure. The first one I could remember that I know I saw when I was pretty young and that was R-rated was Halloween, which I saw at a friend's sleepover party. I think I was in fourth grade.
Yeah.
And it was definitely scary. I remember for some reason what I thought was the scariest was when she like goes into the bedroom and there's like the gravestone there in the bedroom. And for some reason, that's what stuck with me. So when I watched the movie again with you years and years and years later, that was the only scene that I remembered
from
that time. But I wasn't particularly traumatized by it, I wouldn't say. It was nothing like Garfield's Halloween special.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yep. So did you tell your parents that you watched Halloween Uncut or like whatever, R-rated?
I don't think I did. Now they know, though.
Now they know. They listen to this episode.
I don't think I told them then. I'm sure that it's come up after the fact. I mean, I think we've talked about it before on the podcast, but we were pretty sneaky about it. We waited for her parents to go to bed. Naked on. Halloween, so scary.
Yeah, well, it's a great first R-rated horror movie, though.
Yeah. So here's another one from Justin. And this is another one that was hard to research, but I think maybe we got to the bottom of it. So what was the first horror film to do the killer isn't really dead scare? I was looking, actually, speaking of Halloween, Halloween was, you know, the earliest one that came to mind because it's, you know, one of the first slasher movies. And it's really the one that, you know, breathed life into the genre, the genre back to life.
Yes.
But actually, Carrie at the end, I somehow looking at killer isn't really dead got me to the history of the jump scare. And that's where Carrie popped up. And I was like, oh, Carrie, duh. So that's at the very end, which I don't know, maybe it's a dream, maybe it's real life, maybe it's, you know, in her head. But the hand coming out of the grave at the end was, you know, what they said was maybe the inspiration for the future movies of Halloween and Friday the 13th, where the killer isn't really dead. So maybe.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, Carrie's great.
Very good.
All right. So I wanted to ask you this one because it was a very tough one for me. So I do not have an answer, but so I'll let you carry us on this one. And this was from Lisa. And she said, if we could interview any murderer, living or dead, who would it be and why? And what's the first question you would ask?
This is probably cheating. So the first one that came to mind is the Zodiac Killer. And I'd ask, who are you?
Perfect. Yes. Yeah? I love that.
And the reason why would be obviously because I really want to know who the Zodiac is. But I wanted to give a little bit less of a joking answer. So I think my second choice would be Ted Bundy. And the reason why is because I'm still, like, months and months later in the process of reading Stranger Beside Me. But I've been chipping away, you know, a couple pages every couple of days. And I really want to know. And again, it's Ted Bundy, so unless he gets, like, truth serum or something, he's probably not going to tell the truth. But, like, I would like to ask him if there are any circumstances where he could imagine himself just living a normal life and not murdering people. So, you know, is it really an issue with that girl who, you know, turned him down? Does he think that if he had married her, he never would have killed? Or was it something that he was always going to wind up doing? So I'm pretty curious about that because, you know, he does seem like a case where maybe he could have just grown up to be one of those, you know, psychopaths that are actually quite successful in the business world or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, absolutely definitely a psychopath.
Yeah. But CEO of a large Fortune 500 corporation.
Yeah, could be. Yeah. This is another one from Lisa, but this one's for you, David.
Me?
It's for you.
All right.
So what was the first horror movie you ever saw? Why do you love them so much? And who is your next favorite villain besides Freddy?
Ooh, sneaking in a couple of questions. Yes.
Yeah, I love this series of them.
Yeah, no, it's really good. So my first horror movie, which was George Romero's 1968 Night of the Living Dead. Wah-ah-ah. They're coming for you, Barbara. it was on PBS one Halloween night when I was probably 5 or 6, and it was uncut and no breaks, no nothing. It was just on TV, and from there on out, I had recurring nightmares about being chased by zombies, and for years, zombie films were, and probably still are, the only thing that kind of creeps me out. So it definitely had a lasting impact on me. So thank you, George Romero, for giving me those wonderful dreams.
Yeah, I also thank George Romero because I think that your love of horror movies has really shaped who you are, and I love who you are.
Why, thank you. And I love you. As for why I love horror movies, I love them for the thrill, of course, but really I've really kind of always been captivated by the art of the scare and the creative ways that filmmakers have brought undead creatures, nightmares, spooky ghouls, and frightening freaks to life. So really the art of it, you know, whether it's an 80s creature feature with a bunch of gooey, you know, slimy monsters to a more modern like take on horror with some sort of supernatural bent. Yeah, I love all of that. The next one, wow, it's a good one. It's a good question besides Freddy. It's very hard to follow up Freddy for me. I don't have a very inspired answer, but I would have to say it's Michael Myers. John Carpenter is like my favorite filmmaker, and I just love the story of Halloween and the first three movies. The third one doesn't have him in it, but, you know.
But the third one's the best one.
It is. It's fantastic. But I do want to follow that up with, since there's multiple questions, I have multiple answers for this final question in this series. I think just the Deadites in the Evil Dead series are some of my favorite collective villains because, you know, they could be one of your friends when you decide to go on a camping trip out in the cabin of the woods, and any one of them could become a Deadite, turn against you, and try to kill you and swallow your soul.
Yeah. And the design of them, I think, as they get, especially, and we just finished watching Ash vs. Evil Dead, RIP, Ash vs. Evil Dead.
Yes.
But like the designs of them have become like very cool.
Yeah, they have. Yeah, the sort of furrowed brow and the eyes that go wide, yeah, and just the look of them. You're right.
And like,
yeah,
the weird little monsters, like the cell phone monster. I feel like it's yeah, it's very neat. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
When you talk about the creativity of horror movies, that definitely is at the forefront for me.
Yeah. Cool.
All right. So now we're getting into some less true crime and horror movie questions and little questions about us and this podcast and how it came to be. So this one is from Justin, and he wanted to know if there were any other concepts or ideas we had for the podcast.
Oh, yes.
There were a lot of other ideas, yes. And actually, I want to combine this. Debbie asked, why and how did we decide to do a podcast?
Yep.
So I think that the two of those kind of go together. So
Chelsea, Chelsea, your list of ideas.
Yeah, I'm the one to blame for this. You know, why and how did we decide to do a podcast? I David has actually been listening to podcasts for longer than me. You know, you've been listening for years and years and years. And I started with Serial. You know, when Serial became big and popular, I was still in grad school. And when I worked in the lab, I could just put in my headphones and listen to whatever I wanted. And some of my friends had listened to Serial and really liked it. And I listened to it and I loved it. And that was also kind of my gateway drug into true crime podcasts. So from there, I discovered Sword and Scale, and I listened to a bunch of that. And from that, I branched out to My Favorite Murder, which is, I think, where I kind of became a little bit more involved in like the community and joining the Murderino groups and, you know, feeling like I wanted to really be a part of the community, and also realizing, you know, podcasts don't have to be super serious. They can just be fun. So I always wanted to, you know, have a fun podcast, and actually Little Podcast of Horrors, who we had the crossover episode. You know, Julie was the first person I met who had a podcast, and I was like, I want to do that. And of course, the first thing that I wanted to do was have a My Favorite Murder-esque podcast, right? So the only issue with that is I would need to find someone to co-host it with me, which, you know, when it comes down to it, project like this, which is a really big, you know, time commitment, and the logistics of just sitting down and recording are not easy. And I really wanted to have a podcast with David also, because, you know, we are partners in everything, and this would be a big creative venture that we could do together. So, you know, that was where I was like, okay, what can we do that's not My Favorite Murder? Because David is not really, you know, a true crime addict like me, but he loves horror movies. So, you know, that was really where it was like, okay, what if we did this? And once the name came, it was like, you know, grab the domain, grab the Instagram, let's just try it out. And, you know, it's been a lot of fun, but we had other ideas. We're going to do just a horror movie review podcast every couple weeks or so. I'm like, David, let's start another podcast. Yeah. I'm full of ideas, but this is our baby.
We still have kind of an epic one up our sleeve at some point, which I don't want to give it away.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what we're thinking about. We'll see. The move, I think, has been a big time suck. And now that we're settled in and getting into the groove of my new job, we'll see. You might be hearing David's voice pop up somewhere later.
The Fraggle Rock podcast. Yeah. Oh, wait, no.
What was the other idea was to do a podcast reviewing Tales from the Crypt episodes.
Yeah. Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
But that did not come to fruition either.
That was after longtime listeners, or if you remember some of our early episodes where I was bragging about getting that Tales from the Crypt box set for like $20. That was the inspiration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Does that cover it?
I think so, I'm with you 100% when we did like a live interview with the History Dweebs podcast, yeah, which is another great show, and had that was I think one of the first questions we had been publicly asked was, yeah, like, how, you know, how did we sort of start the show, and I agree, like, us being able to work on something creative together and invest time and you know, something a little different, I think is so great and rewarding, and I love doing the show with you. So thanks for refitting the My Favorite Murder format to speak to our strengths or whatever.
Yeah, no, this is just so much more fun than I think anything. And it's a fun, you know, excuse for us to maybe watch some movies together that we never would have watched. And, you know, movies that I've really loved. So kind of on a related note, there's a question from Bisma, and she wants to know, what are some things that we learned and obstacles that we've overcome? Gosh.
Yeah,
I feel like
there's a lot.
There is a lot. And I think a big one that, at least for me, you know, the only way to overcome it was to just keep recording and keep doing this is, you know, feeling comfortable. I think that if you go back and listen to our early episodes, you can kind of hear how uncomfortable I am. We've gotten some reviews to that effect. But I feel, you know, much, much more comfortable with that. And that's just, you know, that's a time thing. And then, of course, the technology. It's just been a hoot.
Yeah. I mean, I had the working knowledge of like recording and editing, but yeah, it's just getting a home setup, a home studio, all figured out and all that. There's just a lot involved in getting your show up and making sure everyone can listen.
Yeah. But I absolutely love, I mean, I guess now that we're a year old, maybe we can say we're somewhat established, but like new podcasts that have been popping up, you know, like I've been able to talk to some people about, oh, like, these are the mics we use, this is how we have it set up, and like feeling like we're kind of can help new podcasts get off the ground, I think has been just a really good point to make it to. And it's been great. And watching, I think we kind of started at a similar time to a lot of other podcasts. So it's cool seeing everyone celebrating their anniversary. And now it's our turn.
Yep. Bisma has another question, and that was, what is our favorite episode we've recorded so far and why? So Chelsea, do you have one in mind that just kind of jumps out at you?
I do. I think that my favorite episode we've recorded so far has been In Cold Blood.
Oh,
and I think that's just because the movie was so good. I think that's kind of by far been my favorite movie that we've watched for the podcast. And it was also a really interesting story to research. It's like simultaneously easier and harder when there's a lot of information out there about it. And there is a lot of information out there about In Cold Blood. But I think the big thing that made it for me was just how much I enjoyed the movie, though.
Oh, very cool. Yeah.
What about you?
I have two. The first one, which I feel like I learned a ton about, and it was also kind of a surreal episode, and that was episode 7 on Clervius Narcisse, Zombies and the Serpent and the Rainbow, Wes Craven's film that was inspired by the events that transpired and the research into zombification.
Yes.
I thought that was pretty amazing. Wade Davis's book and how he encountered the culture in Haiti and all that. That was just really amazing. And I learned a lot. And I got to talk about, one of my favorite directors who did A Nightmare on Elm Street, Wes Craven.
Yeah. Oh, that's good, because Bisma's other request was to sneak in as many Nightmare on Elm Street references as possible. So we're doing pretty good so far.
Yeah. And, the other one that I think had a really good response was our episode 16 on Deadly Dreams and A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, another reference. You're on a roll.
Yeah. That was just a lot of fun. And it was our Halloween episode of last year, and I thought that was really great. So
yeah. Now you should bring up older episodes. It got me thinking, our episode on Dead Ringers.
Oh,
that
yeah,
was a
yeah.
lot of fun to research, because it's not really like a typical true crime story, but it's really fascinating.
Yeah, and we got to talk about David Cronenberg. So
it's true. Yeah.
Cool.
So here's one from Charles. What is the airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow? The answer is 24 miles per hour. But also, we see that reference. We get it. We get you. Thank you. Yeah.
It's good.
All right. And this will be a fun one. So this is Debbie and Teresa. They both asked this question. How did we meet?
Well, we were both cleaning up a crime scene. yeah. Oh, wait. No, that's not true.
No.
We met in person for the very first time.
Yes.
At a concert. And it was a concert for the band Daughter.
Yes.
And actually a mutual friend had organized the event of a bunch of people just meeting up to go to the show. And I don't think she necessarily set us up.
No, but she had mentioned you to me before, because I had gone to trivia with her. And one of the questions, the answer was the movie Cube, which I knew, and I got the answer to it. And she was like, oh, I have a friend who's really into horror movies. So it's actually the first thing I ever learned about you.
Well, and she mentioned you to me as well. So yeah. There was a little bit of matchmaking going
there
on there.
There was a little bit of matchmaking.
But we did meet
on,
organically, which I thought was really great.
Yes.
And we hit it off very well.
Yes. David was wearing a shirt with a cat on it. And I had a phone case, a black phone case with little ears like a cat.
Yes.
So we had initially bonded over our love of cats and our love of going to concerts, and we talked all night, and I had a very generous friend who I'd driven there, and she kind of bowed out and sat in the corner and played on her phone so that we could just keep talking. So
yeah,
thanks, Jess.
And then we had our first date the next week.
Yes, our first date was, I think that was Sunday, and then our first date was Friday.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, it was.
And then, so the venue we met at was Plush in St. Louis. That was the same site of our first date.
Yeah.
And then I think a year or two later, it closed.
It did. It tragically closed.
Yeah, it tragically closed. But David still proposed to me outside of Plush.
I did.
So it was very sweet. Yes. Yeah, so that's our origin story. So that was in 2013. Fall of 2013
And then we got married October 1st of 2016.
So here's another one from Teresa. How are we happy and upbeat all the time? The answer is we're not. I'm glad we could fool you on the podcast, though. But I mean, recording the podcast makes us happy. So that's probably why we sound happy and upbeat. But obviously, no one is happy and upbeat all the time. We just had a very stressful move, but you know, we're there for each other through this stuff, which definitely helps.
I'm a ray of sunshine all the time. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yep, it's true.
Yep. Yeah. It's called it's like sometimes it's like, "Hey David," and sometimes it's like, "Hey Mr. Happy and Upbeat Guy."
All right. Right-handed or left-handed?
Oh wait, no. Hang on. All right. No, I just thought of this though. I think one of the things that hopefully comes across in the podcast, that sort of like intangible happy and upbeat feeling, is that Chelsea and I really love being together. I feel like we have a great chemistry. We get along super well.
I would hope we have good chemistry. I feel like when we get that feedback
Am I supposed to say that we have chemistry? I think other people are supposed to say we have chemistry.
And we've gotten that feedback from listeners, and it's like, well, we're married. I hope we have good chemistry.
Yeah.
But no, but it's sweet. It makes me so happy when we hear that. You know, because I would hope that it comes across.
All right. So right-handed or left-handed, Chelsea?
Right-handed. And you?
Left-handed.
Yep. Yeah. I think it matches up, right? Because left-handed is supposed to be the more creative side of the brain, and right-handed is the more technical side of the brain. So.
Yeah, I'm always in my right mind.
Yeah, I'm always in my left mind. Wait, no. What?
Yeah.
Best ice cream flavor?
Oh, chocolate.
See, I'm very particular. I used to really like butter pecan. I think that was my favorite for a while. But my favorite ever is this ice cream called El Diablo that you can get at JP Licks, which is a ice cream chain in Boston, and it's chocolate, but it's like a spicy chocolate.
That sounds tasty.
That's my favorite.
Ooh, cool.
It's so good.
Nice.
All right, and then the last question from Teresa is, what kind of work did we do before podcasting / do we both still work outside of podcasting? And the answer is, we still work outside of podcasting. Podcasting, I think there are a handful of podcasters out there who actually make a living podcasting, but 99.99999999% of us, which I'm assuming that's a percentage because there are so many podcasts, but this is something we do for fun. This is, you know, a passion project for, you know, most people that I know. People aren't really making a living from it unless you're My Favorite Murder, which congratulations to them. So we both work outside of podcasting. Actually, my job is what moved us to Santa Fe. Yeah, I'm an environmental engineer. I do laboratory research. So that's what I do to make some money, some change.
Yep, doctor.
Yeah, yes. What about you, David? What do you do for work? Check out @LabCreature on Instagram.
Yeah, and I've just a designer of all things. I guess I've been doing it for like 20 years now. So primarily web design, user interface design, graphics, all the everything. I don't know. I do a little bit of everything that's involved in the digital creative arts, I guess, and also in the fine arts.
Yes.
So yeah, check out @LabCreature on Instagram, I guess, really to see what I'm up to.
Yeah.
But no, great questions. So thank you so much. And hopefully you guys have learned a little bit, well, from all these questions, but this one's kind of a very like personal one. So
yeah. Well, here's another personal one for you from Mariah. What is our favorite kind of pizza?
Yes. The more cheese, the merrier. No meat ever on a pizza. And I love like a good like double cheese, deep pan, mushrooms or green peppers, whatever. You know, the kind of good veggies. What about you?
Well, I'm a bit spoiled because I grew up in New Jersey, so I had access to an assortment of delicious pizzas as I was growing up. So to me, the best pizza is New York style, not super thin crust, but just look up New York style pizza if you don't know what it is. If you don't know what it is, I'm sorry for you.
Yeah,
it's like a very classic pizza, so not deep dish. I love plain cheese, but I actually also really love white pizza with broccoli, and it has kind of like lumps of ricotta cheese and a bunch of mozzarella melted and broccoli, and it's delicious. That's usually what we get from this one good pizza place close to our house. Shout out Santino's Pizza. I took you the first time we went, and just not since then. No.
I will say my favorite kind of pizza is Quattro's Deep Pan Pizza in my hometown of Carbonell, Illinois. It's the only location in the world, so that's that.
It's actually Quattro's is delicious, and that's coming from a pizza snob. And it's not New York style, but it is really good.
So Chelsea, this one's is a very special question from your mom.
Oh no.
And she's wondering why you're obsessed with violence and murder. Did you have a horrible mother?
The answer is no. I had and have a wonderful mother. And
she is awesome.
Yes, I'm obsessed with violence and murder because of video games and rap music, of course. Yeah. No. I don't know why. I think that for some people it's interesting, for other people it's to be avoided. And I am someone who finds it interesting and fascinating, and it has nothing to do with how awesome my mom is.
Right on. This question is from Good Morning Nancy, fantastic horror movie podcast.
Yes.
What is our favorite meal of the day? So what's yours, Chelsea?
Breakfast, of course. Breakfast is my favorite. It's my favorite meal to go out for. It's my favorite meal to cook at home. I love breakfast.
Yeah. I love breakfast too. I feel like it's the only meal that any meal, whether it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner, you could interchange it for breakfast and it would be good. But I've never been in a situation where at breakfast time, I'm like, you know, it'd be really good, a dinner kind of meal. I think I'll have insert whatever.
I have had leftover pizza for breakfast a handful of times though.
Oh yeah. That could be good now and again.
But I love breakfast. I love eggs.
Yeah.
I love potatoes.
Yum.
I love pancakes. I love waffles. Now I really want breakfast.
I just saw a waffle iron that you can make your waffles into like a keyboard. Like it's not, it doesn't actually function, yeah. But it just looks like a keyboard.
That's cool. Yeah. I'd eat that.
A Texas-shaped waffle is kind
of
neat.
I've had quite a few of those. I had a Texas-shaped waffle in a hotel in Nashville.
Oh,
oddly
yeah.
Enough.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. So we've got a handful of them from Emily Plus Dogs on Instagram. So she wants to know, when did we first tell each other about our love of true crime and horror movies? And I know for you in horror movies, at least, it was early. It might have been actually the night that we met that it came up just in conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, have you seen A Nightmare on Elm Street?
Well, because I knew from our mutual friend that... you know, you were kind of known for being the horror movie guy.
Wow. That's wow.
So okay. Yeah, it came up early. In terms of true crime, I was not very forthcoming. I think probably my only, what would you call it, like a giveaway was when I would bring up all of the horrible news stories that I was reading.
Yeah, you did.
Probably did that for, it was probably up until, you know, podcasts were the first time that I feel like I really sought out, you know, true crime as a genre. I was like, oh, this is something that exists. Oh, other people are into it. You know, as a media I would consume. I did have friends, my best friend that I met in college. You know, we kind of bonded over our interest in it. But
yeah, I remember you talking about like serial killers here and there. And I was like, wow, you know a lot about insert like, whoever
wow,
serial
you're really
killer.
Creepy.
No, I was like, ooh, I like you.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think it was like, hey, I'm into true crime. You like horror movies? I'm into true crime. It's like peanut butter and chocolate.
Yeah, no, I was quite sneaky about it. I waited until you moved in with me and couldn't escape. And then I was like, by the way, I like talking about serial killers. So here's another one from Emily Plus Dogs. She wants to know what the first film we watched together and said yes at is. So a movie that we watched together that we really enjoyed. And we were trying to think of like early movies that we had watched together and just go with the reference. We did watch Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, we went through the whole series. Yeah.
That was pretty early on. I know Evil Dead was early on because we made costumes while we watched it.
We did, yeah.
We did John Carpenter movies kind of early on. I did list a few. These were ones that kind of stood out to me from movies that we watched early on that I like really, really loved. So Reanimator.
Yes.
Excellent. In the Mouth of Madness, which I've talked about, my favorite John Carpenter movie, and Dead and Buried.
Oh, yeah.
So those were the three that kind of stood out, at least to me. You know, we did a lot of watching movies that David loves. I mean, that's kind of your thing. We did watching TV shows that I love.
Yeah, because I...
I've always been a big TV show buff.
Yes, yeah, you are. And, yeah, I just never watched a a ton of like series.
Yeah, yeah. So I made David watch a bunch of Doctor Who with me. We watched first 5 seasons of Supernatural together.
I believe you introduced me.
I mean, I didn't force you. I didn't tie you up and hold your eyes open like in Clockwork Orange. Or maybe I did. Life on Mars is a TV show that I introduced you to.
Supernatural was a big one that you showed me because I feel like you're super knowledgeable about and adamant about the first 5 seasons being the only seasons that exist. And so we breezed through those and I really liked that show.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm considering, as I've been reading more about it, I've been considering watching. I watched a couple more seasons after that before I finally stopped, but then I heard it gets good again, but now I'm so far behind. It's tough. We'll see. But yeah, are there any other movies that I introduced you to that
Bridget
you
Jones's
liked?
Diary. Thought that was a good one.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I don't have very good taste in movies. The Proposal, yeah.
Oh yeah, that was like the first romantic comedy we saw together.
It was, yep. Still one of my all-time favorites. Ooh. A bunch of people just turned off the podcast and unsubscribed.
Oh.
The Sure Thing.
Yes,
yeah.
That's
a lot of the movies.
I really,
yeah,
like that.
I feel like a lot of the movies I introduced you to have been romantic comedies, just because, I mean, even other movies that I love that aren't romantic comedies, you've seen. You've just seen many more movies than me.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of movies, I know.
Yeah. Oh, and here's another really good one. I do like this one. Is there a horror film or case that one of us loves but the other can't stomach?
And this one kind of answers it for both of us, which is The Silence of the Lambs.
Yes.
And I think I come
across it now.
I do,
yeah.
I do. But you know, we talk about on our episode on the case and the movie.
It's a Patreon episode, so don't freak out.
Oh, that's right.
It's like, oh, I never listened to it. But yeah, if you want to listen to it, you gotta pay us $1. Gosh darn it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was one that, I mean, it so churned my stomach that for like 20 years afterwards I couldn't watch Anthony Hopkins in a movie at all. Not at all. No. I know. It's a really good movie, but yeah.
I've loved it from day one. That was one that I watched when I was fairly young and just loved it. You know, there are some for me that I have trouble stomaching. Obviously, home invasion movies are hard ones for me. But another one that kind of popped out that I have some trouble with, but David really loves, is Pumpkinhead.
Yes.
So I watched it once a few years ago around Halloween time at David's behest. I just love the little kid so much that I obviously knew he was gonna die because that was the catalyst for the movie, and it was difficult, and I can't imagine watching it again.
Oh yeah, the dirt bikes.
I can't even think about it.
Moving on to Emily Plus's second question. Plus Dogs is
her second question, her last question.
I mean, last question, yeah. from Emily Plus Dogs. Do our cats watch movies with us? And
yes.
The answer is yes.
Always.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. We have enough cats that there's usually at least 2 on the couch with us anytime we're watching a movie.
Yeah, totally. And sometimes Eames will jump up like in front of the TV and kind of watch very closely at what's going on.
Yep. Wants to be part of the action. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our cats love it because, you know, most of them are lap cats or lap adjacent cats, and you know, if we're sitting down for a long period of uninterrupted time, they're very pleased.
But they don't seem to get shocked by like sounds or anything that's going on in a horror movie.
Yeah, I don't know if we could say that they're watching the movie with us, but they're accompanying us in our movie watching.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
Mostly they're just sleeping.
Yeah.
All right. I thought this was a perfect question to end on. This is from Tony Supernova. And the question is, how long do we plan on doing the podcast for? Indefinitely.
Yeah.
You know, for as long as it's fun and we have the time to commit to, you know, putting out episodes that we're pretty proud of.
Yeah. And one of the things, you know, we try to do with the show is to not just do a string of the most obvious films based on true crimes. We don't want to like cover all of the like top, let's say, horror movies that are based on true crimes. So that's why you'll see our genres are fairly eclectic.
Yeah, yeah. And I, you know, as someone who listens to a ton of true crime podcasts, I also want to avoid the ones that, you know, a lot of other podcasts have covered. So, you know, someday we're going to do Zodiac. It's probably my favorite true crime movie of all time. But like, who isn't familiar with the Zodiac case? To me, it's much more interesting to, you know, bring you something that maybe you haven't heard of.
Yeah. Although, like a Zodiac with David Fincher, there's a lot to talk about the filmmaking that side of it. So, you know, it kind of depends on how heavily it's weighted towards the case versus the movie. But yeah, like Chelsea said, as long as we have the time and hopefully energy to keep producing the show, we'll keep making it.
We have no ending in sight right now. It's still fun. I still have a very long list of movies that I want to cover and stories that I want to cover. And also, Tony Supernova says, we are hands down the cutest podcast couple.
Oh, that's super sweet.
So, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, that's the end of our list of questions. Do we want to end this one on a now playing and coming soon for good measure?
Sure. I'll have to think of something off the top of my head, but yeah. Why not?
All right. Well, I can think of one off the top of my head for my now playing.
Oh, what do you got?
We watched the Overboard remake. So speaking of romantic comedies, I know I had talked about previously for my coming soon, it was the Overboard remake, and it was the first movie that we watched in Santa Fe. We watched it 2 days after moving here. We checked out the Violet Crown, which is a really cool movie theater where they serve food and drinks in the rail yard district. And it was great. It was cute. It pressed all the right buttons.
Yeah, it was cute. It was a cute movie.
What about you? Do you have a now playing?
So I'm after our long drive. Our drive was upwards of 20 hours plus out here.
Yeah. Oh, it was plus.
Yeah.
20 hours plus.
Yeah. And I got the audiobook for Stephen King's 11/22/63, and I'm nearly done with it. I have about maybe 5 hours left, but I think the audiobook is 30 plus hours, so it's a long one. But I really love it so far. It's a pretty epic story. It involves time travel, and I'll just leave it at that. I really like it, and I'm looking forward to finishing it hopefully this week. So do you have a coming soon, Chelsea?
My coming soon, I think we talked about this in the Cult of Based on a True Crime discussion group, but the Netflix original series Evil Genius. I'm very excited. It kind of came out when we were in the middle of the move, so it took us a bit to, you know, get the TV set up, get the TV here in Santa Fe, and I've just been looking forward to watching it, and now it's just a matter of finding the time to binge all the episodes, because I'm not very patient, but it's about the pizza delivery man. Well, this is called the Pizza Bomber, which he's the pizza delivery man who had that bomb attached to his neck that eventually, you know, went off after he was forced to rob a bank, and it's supposed to be excellent. People have been just raving about it. So
sounds like a sci-fi movie to me.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I think you're gonna be really interested in it too. It's a little bit reminiscent, I think, of, you know, Making a Murderer in terms of it just being a very good, like, crowd pleasing true crime documentary series.
Sounds fun.
Yeah. So what's your coming soon, David?
Well, as a Star Wars nerd, I have to say Solo. We're seeing it. By the time you listen to this, whatever, you may have seen it or not. But yeah, the preview night. We're going to check it out. And that's what I'm looking forward to. I want to see a bunch of Chewbacca.
Yeah, I'm excited for Lando. Donald Glover.
Yes. Yeah. So well, Lando too, of course. Yeah. He is going to be awesome. I am excited about that. So that's it. That's what I got. That's my Solo answer.
Thank you guys so much for, you know, sticking with us this past year. If you're on social media, let us know what your favorite episode we've put out is. I'd love to know. So you could find us on Instagram @ Based on a True Crime. You could find us
on Facebook, our Facebook discussion group, Cult of Based on a True Crime. You can get to that through our Facebook page, which is Based on True Crime Podcast.
On Twitter, we are @ True Crime Based. We have a website, basedonatruecrime.com. You could email us, basedonatruecrime@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear, you know, what topic do you want us to cover in the next year? Let us know.
Yes. Yeah, please do. And thanks so much for, we talked about ourselves for an hour.
Jeez. Maybe that's not surprising.
Yeah. So thanks for the chance to get personal with you guys. It's been really fun. And we really appreciate all the questions.
Yeah. And we'll be coming at you with some of that content you guys know and love, our true crimes and movies. Yeah. We'll be coming at you maybe sooner than you think.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel like I just want to say thank you, Chelsea, for being an awesome podcast host.
Aw, thank you, David.
You're awesome, and you're an amazing wife, an amazing person. And I'm just so proud of your awesome accomplishments and your new job and getting us here. And we survived the move, which is like, it is a very stressful thing that people go through. And I think we survived it.
Yeah.
Maybe we're ghosts.
We might be ghosts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also wanted to give a... Besides all of the great podcast community support through true crime and horror and you listeners from around the world, also wanted to give some creative credit to Nico Vitis, who composed our theme music. We started off with, you know, some stock music, and you know, we reached out to Nico, and he really delivered on something that fits the tone of the show. So
I feel like that was when I was like, oh, we're like really doing this.
Yeah,
this is a real thing. Yeah.
So, you know, find him. We Talk of Dreams on Twitter and wetalkofdreams.com and also on Instagram. So thank you so much for having a big part of introing the show and giving us a great feel. So we are very grateful.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of grateful, we made it. We made it, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, just remember, though, death is but a door.
And time is but a window.
We'll be back.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.